Welcome to episode 112 of Practical Defense. Poor advice. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. This week, we're going to look at some poor personal protection information that is floating around out there on the internet. Also, Tony Brown joins us with a product review. But before we get into those segments, I first want to read an email from Drew. He wrote in about my comments about avoiding products with aggressive and inflammatory product descriptions. He writes, "Jim Wagner, as I'm sure you know, has designed a combat knife. And I was wondering, how do you think using his knife would go down in court, after one defended themselves, of course? Personally, I don't think the defendant would fare well when faced with a description of the knife." And then Drew provided a link to the knife in question. He brings up a valid point, and I felt that it warranted sharing with everyone. So here's my response to him. I completely agree that the description of Jim's first reality-based blade does go against my recommendation. That's why I carry the other version of his folding knife, the recurve blade. It has a better civilian description, and it looks less threatening. Now, Jim's early knives were designed primarily for military and law enforcement, but could also be used by average citizens. He even has a new fixed blade out that is illegal in most places that was designed exclusively for the military, but is still sold to civilians for training and educational purposes. I gave my cousins the original reality-based blades before they were deployed with the military, both in the Army and Navy. They still and carry use them daily while on duty. As I've said many times before, the shape, design, and descriptions are not necessarily going to turn a ruling in your favor or against you. The selection process is merely trouble avoidance. So thanks for writing in, Drew. I am certain that a few other people were asking the same question. Now, I normally don't like to brag, but I'm going to this week anyway. Back in episode 110, posted January 17, I mentioned in the introductory segment that there were a bunch of scam artists out there posing as disaster relief organizations. Well, since that episode went live, I have seen a bunch of other agencies post similar messages, including the sheriff's station in the next county over, and even LifeLock. With fully admitted hubris, I just wanted to point out that you heard it here first. Well, nearly. The only source I can find that posted the information before me was the FBI, and they posted their press release on January 13th, so they only beat me by a couple of days. I've included information in episodes that others have picked up on later more than a few times. I really love it when I include something in the show and then 2 weeks later, some reporter on CNN says the same thing. I've never felt the need to bring it up before, and I don't know why I am this time. I think I'm just starting to see it happen more often. I don't know. I'm all about sharing in the personal protection community. When I borrow something from somebody else, I am always careful to give credit where credit is due. I'm a firm believer in freely sharing safety information with as many people as possible. That's one of the primary reasons I started the show to begin with. So, if you want cutting-edge personal protection information, you're in the right place. Oh, and another cool point that I keep forgetting to bring up. Practical Defense has passed the 500,000 mark in total downloads. That number includes the total number of all downloads since the show started back in August of 2007. This actually happened a while back, but it kept slipping my mind to mention on the show. It's cool stuff, and it only happened because of you guys signing in every week to listen to me babble. I really appreciate your support. And finally, I apologize for not posting last week. I was running behind on my work, and then my computer crashed on me. A complete, catastrophic, unrecoverable failure. I didn't lose any data, but my video card died on me. I run a Mac Pro, so I couldn't just run down to the local computer shop and pick up a new card. Even the local Apple store didn't carry what I needed. I love my Mac, but this is the second time I've had to replace the video card. The first one was replaced for free on warranty. And of course, my warranty expired 1 week, 7 days before the second crash. The problem with this particular model video card is that it had a tendency to overheat and burn out. When they replaced it for free the first time, they replaced it with an identical model. So in another 14 months, it burned out again. No real surprise there. Now, $400 poorer, I am back up and running and trying desperately to catch up on all my days of lost work. I did what I could on my laptop, but I needed my main computer's power for the audio and video editing. Oh, and this time, since it was my money, I got a different model video card with a much better cooling system. So, again, I apologize for missing last week, but you get what you pay for, and I remind you that this show is free. Alrighty, we'll be right back with Tony Brown and our investigation into poor personal protection advice.
Hello, everybody. This is Tony Brown, and I'm the host of two podcasts. I have a podcast over at the Gun Rights Radio Network, which is the Firearms Cafe podcast, and I also do another podcast, which does mostly reviews and pretty much whatever else I want to kind of ramble on about, and that's called The Armed Ape. Both of these can be found on iTunes. The Armed Ape one is definitely more for an adult audience. Now, I'd like to thank Alex for having me back on his show to do another segment. I always enjoy Alex's show. In fact, what's funny is on his last show about using the urinals, that was what I was going to talk about for my next segment. Great minds must think alike. Now, on the last segment, I talked about the importance of knowing how to do some basic things should you find yourself with a flat tire. And those things included knowing how to get the tire down, making sure that it was properly inflated, knowing how to use the tools that actually came with the vehicle, and knowing how to use them safely. Now, the segment today, I'm going to continue in that vein, and I'll talk a little bit about upgrading a tool that usually comes standard with your vehicle. Now, on show number 6 of the Armed Ape podcast, I did a review of a tool that I found quite useful and that can have multiple uses. And the product is called the Gorilla Telescoping Lug Wrench. Now, before I get into the description, I'll talk a little bit about how I came to have this thing. Years ago, I used to drive a great big truck. I had horses and hauled a lot of hay. And everything I had on that truck was heavy duty, kind of oversized. And one day I got a flat and was using the stuff that came with the vehicle. And I actually had a pretty hard time getting the lug nuts off. And in one case, because it was kind of short and spindly, that wasn't very well made, the actual wrench that came with it kind of started to bend. And I thought, well, I don't really want to be in that position again. So I went out and I was looking for something a little bit more robust. And I found this on the aisle of, I can't remember what the name of the auto parts store, Checker Auto or something like that, AutoZone, one of them. And it was this thing called the Gorilla Telescoping Lug Wrench. And when it compresses down, and when it's compressed down, it's only about 14 inches long. And when it's extended, it extends out to about 21 inches. It comes with two separate sockets. And each end of the socket is a different size. So those two sockets are going to give you four lug nut sizes. And those are going to fit pretty much every car, truck, or SUV that's out there today. The drive of it is a half-inch drive. And you can use pretty much any half-inch socket with the wrench. So that if you did happen to have an oddball size lug nut for your particular vehicle, you can go to that auto parts store or even the tire store, and they'll probably have a socket that you could buy that would be in half inch so that you could have one that would fit your particular car. The only other thing I would recommend is that if you are going to buy a separate socket to go with it, that you get one that is a little bit more heavy duty. You can get one that's made for air impact wrenches, and those will be able to take the amount of leverage and stress that you're going to put on the sockets when you're changing a tire. But by being so compact, it can store in the glove box of most cars and trucks. You can take the sockets, throw them in a baggie, keep them in your glove box. Or you can maybe put them in a little bag, tie them around the wrench, and stick it in the trunk of your car if it won't fit in the glove box. It's really well made, and it's quite tough. Part of the reason why it's kind of well made is it's such a simple thing, it would be kind of hard to mess it up. Now, I've had mine for several years, and I've changed many a tire with it. I've used it for other things, putting together horse fencing things where I needed to get a lot of leverage on it, working on pipe and things like that, and it stood up. It looks brand new. I've actually stood on it a couple of times and jumped up and down on there because the guys at the tire store had put the lug nuts on so tight, you couldn't almost get them off. Again, kind of going back to that thing about the tools that come standard with your vehicle. Most of those tools that come with your vehicle, they're really not very good. They'll get the job done, but they're made to kind of a minimum standard. Sometimes they're made more to be able to fit in kind of a small little tiny space. By being able to do that, they give up on being kind of robust or being real hardy. They also may be difficult to be able to get and maintain and have a really good grip on them, especially if it's wet out or if it's really cold. The last thing you want is for your hands to slip off or for that thing to slip off and you smash your fingers or your knuckles onto the pavement. It's pretty much a relatively inexpensive upgrade. I think I paid around $19 for mine, and I think you can find them on Amazon and some other places online for probably around $16, maybe add in a few more dollars for shipping. Now, earlier I spoke that it could have some multiple uses, and these other uses are things for which it's not designed, but that you could use it in an emergency. Now, it could be used to break out a car window if there was a car accident, and let's say the door was jammed shut and you needed to be able to get in there to get that person out. Well, you can take that and smash that window right out. And while it's not a very pleasant thought, it could also be used as a defensive weapon. What you have in your hand if you're out there changing that tire is essentially, it's a 21-inch heavy metal club. And again, should you find yourself in that dark parking lot and you become the object of some unwanted attention, the sight of you up and alert facing your would-be attacker with a 21-inch metal club in your hand may be enough of an incentive for that person to choose somebody else. You may represent a little bit too hard of a target for them. If you're on a backcountry road and a couple of unfriendly dogs happen to approach, again, not a fun thing to envision, but you may be able to fend off that dog or dogs. I know these things aren't pleasant things to think about, but they are some other practical uses of the tool. That's going to do it for me today, and I will talk to you next time. Take care, everybody, and stay safe.
Thanks, Tony, and welcome back, everybody. Before I even read these messages, I want to make it clear that I do not advocate either of these methods I'll discuss in just a bit. These are examples of poor advice. Things that you can find out there that someone else has recommended that I think are bad ideas. The internet is a wild, wild world, and you can find someone saying just about anything if you look hard enough. There is plenty of wonderful information, but there is an equal amount of horrible advice. Hopefully by the end of this episode, you'll be better equipped to make that distinction on your own. The first example of poor advice comes from a post to the GRRN message board. Now again, this user thought the information was horrible and posted it as an example of what idiots are saying out there. According to the post, there are email messages floating around recommending the use of wasp poison spray for self-defense rather than using pepper spray or OC spray. I'll quote the email here. A friend who is a receptionist in a church in a high-risk area was concerned about someone coming into the office on Monday to rob them when they were counting the collection. She asked the local police department about using pepper spray, and they recommended to her that she get a can of wasp spray instead. The wasp spray, they told her, can shoot up to 20 feet away and is a lot more accurate, while the pepper spray, they have to get in too close and could overpower you. The wasp spray temporarily blinds an attacker until they get to the hospital for an antidote. She keeps a can on her desk in the office, and it doesn't attract attention from people like a can of pepper spray would. She also keeps one nearby at home for home protection. Thought this was interesting and might be of use. Val Glinka teaches self-defense to students at Sylvania Southview High School. For decades, he suggested putting a can of wasp spray and hornet spray near your door or bed. Glinka says, "This is better than anything I can teach them." Glinka considers it inexpensive, easy to find, and more effective than mace or pepper spray. The can typically shoots 20 to 30 feet, so if someone tries to break into your home, Glinka says, spray the culprit in the eyes. It's a tip he's given to students for decades. It's also one he wants everyone to hear. If you're looking for protection, Glinka says, look to the spray. That's going to give you a chance to call the police, maybe get out, maybe even save a life. Please share this with all the people in your life. Holy moly, is this bad advice. Every tool has its purpose, and the purpose of wasp spray is to kill wasps. It's a poison, for goodness sake. We spent a few episodes on proper weapon selection. Knowing what you do now, how do you think a judge and jury would treat you for permanently blinding someone with wasp spray? And I highly doubt that anybody in law enforcement would actually recommend this. I can't believe that. I really have a very, very hard time believing that. Now, sure, if I was in a fight for my life and was the only thing within reach, yes, I would use it. But that's an unplanned, spontaneous weapon of opportunity in a life and death encounter. What this self-proclaimed self-defense expert is recommending is that you buy and keep wasp spray for the specific purpose of self-defense. Bad, bad, bad idea. When you're talking about chemicals, for any reason, never stray outside product labeling. I'm talking about medicines, cleaning product, animal poisons, and even food. Now, for example, did you know that enough chocolate can kill your pet dog? You can find charts on the net that specify the type of chocolate and the amount per weight of your dog that is dangerous or lethal. My point is that different chemicals affect different animals in different ways. All mammals have the same basic organs, livers, kidneys, and so on, but the same organs process chemicals differently depending upon the species. Also consider the vast differences in brain chemistry. Here's another example. We've all heard of the drug PCP. It's also called angel dust. It was designed as an anesthetic for humans in the 1950s, but had a bad side effect of severe hallucinations. It is still produced and used legally today as a veterinary anesthetic. I've personally seen it used effectively on big animals, including horses and cattle. So PCP is a good example of something that is safe and effective on animals that will make humans nuts. So why would you want to spray wasp poison containing neurotoxins designed to kill insects into the eyes of a human, and into the throat, and possibly into the lungs? It's a really bad idea, especially since there is an equally effective alternative designed and approved for the same purpose. You're just asking for trouble with wasp spray. The key here is if any suggestion gives you pause, if it makes you say, "What the heck?" perhaps you shouldn't implement it. A sound concept will almost always make you instantly think, "Wow, that's a great idea." The wasp spray is not that type of idea. The next example of a poor idea is not a truly harmful suggestion the way using wasp spray instead of OC spray is, but I don't like it and I think it is a futile option and it causes a false sense of security. This posting has been passed around a lot. I've received it as parts of messages from friends, my family has sent it to me for use as a quick tip, and even listeners have submitted it. The deeper you dig, the more this message appears to be urban legend. Most people refer me to the lifehacker.com posting. However, upon inspection, Lifehacker refers to a blog post on wisebread.com. Then, the wisebread.com author says he got the information from his mother-in-law. I'll quote the Wisebread article here. "This temp was sent to me by my mother-in-law, which she found in a copy of a local workplace newsletter called The Cherry Creek Leak. The advice was given by a neighborhood watch coordinator." Okay. So where did the information actually come from? Someone's mother-in-law read it in a newsletter who heard it from some anonymous authority figure? That's not my idea of a credible source. Before you rely on anything for personal safety, do your own research, folks. By now, hundreds of thousands of people have probably received this so-called safety information. I hope no one is relying on it. I'll read the posting of the core of the message from wisebread.com. "Next time you come home for the night and you start to put your keys away, think of this. Put your car keys beside your bed at night. If you hear a noise outside your home or someone's trying to get in your house, just press the panic button for your car. The alarm will be set off and the horn will continue to sound until either you turn it off or the car battery dies. It's a security alarm system that you probably already have and requires no installation. Test it. It will go off from almost everywhere inside your house and will keep honking until your battery runs down or until you reset it with a button on the key fob chain. It works if you park in your driveway or your garage. If your car alarm goes off when someone is trying to break into your house, odds are the intruder won't stick around. After a few seconds, all the neighbors will be looking out of their windows to see who's out there, and sure enough, the criminal won't want that. And remember to carry your keys while walking to your car in a parking lot. The alarm can work the same way there. I am not a big fan of this because most people ignore car alarms these days. If they do go off for an extended period of time and someone bothers to get out of bed and walk out into the cold, dark night, it will be far too late to come to anyone's rescue. If you happen to see someone prowling outside your home, you are better off calling the police and holing up in your safe room than trying to scare them away with a car alarm. If the criminal's already inside, it is highly unlikely the car alarm will get them to leave. If they're in the process of attacking you, I would suggest reaching for a defensive weapon over the car alarm. Now, just last night, my 2-year-old nephew set off my truck's car alarm. We were visiting my sister, and my nephew wanted to look at my keys. We were all in the living room, perhaps 75 feet from my truck parked in her driveway. I saw him pushing the buttons on my keychain, and I listened for the alarm to go off. With all of the normal family noise going on in the home, no one heard the truck alarm. It was faint, and only I heard it because I was listening for it. That revelation is what provoked me to pick the subject to cover this week. My evaluation and experience suggest that a car alarm is completely ineffective in home or personal security. I also read a great article published by the U.S. Concealed Carry Association, and I apologize, but I cannot find the article right now. I am kicking myself because I set it aside for future use, and of course, I can't find it now. If anyone has read this article I'm referring to, please send me an email and I'll mention it in a future episode. I would really like to give credit to the original author. It was an outstanding article. So, this author ran a personal study in various environments to see if anyone would come to his aid. He set off his car alarm in his home driveway, a grocery store parking lot, and a bunch of other places. I think he may even have called for help a few times. No one came to his aid. Not a single person in all of his tests. No one. So that says quite a few things there all at once. First, you are on your own if you need help. You are your best defense, and you cannot rely on strangers for help. Second, a car alarm is a completely ineffective tool for alerting others to your distress. When you select a technique for personal protection, you should evaluate the information, may even test it if you can safely, before you incorporate it into your regimen. Do it for everything related to your personal safety. I'm talking about anything you read, anything someone suggests to you, and everything and anything I might suggest. Also consider that the information may be sound, but after research, you determine that it is not effective for your particular situation. Always do your homework.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. The summary is really short this week. I really only have 2 key points. If the self-defense suggestion gives you pause, question it. Take nothing at face value, even if you hear it from a supposed expert. Do your own research. And next, do not rely on techniques that require others to come to your aid. No one is coming to help you. I know it sounds harsh, but you're on your own for at least 10 minutes after the call is made to the police. And that'll do it for this week. But before we go, we have a gift for everyone. In celebration of my column moving from the website to the print edition of the magazine, Taekwondo Times has given us an exclusive promo code for a 20% discount on 1- and 2-year subscriptions. Enter the promo code of PRACDEF01, that's PRACDEF01, at checkout. The subscription to the print edition of the magazine includes digital copies as well. And if you're on the road, you can find the promo code and a link in the show notes. I apologize to the international folks, but the code is only good in the United States. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.